why don't we get going here? I'm Joel Tickner. I'm the project director of the Lowell Center for Sustainable Production and coordinate the Green Chemistry and Commerce Council. I want to welcome you all to the first day of summer and our June webinar. It's a beautiful day here in Boston, and I hope it is wherever else you all are. Our call today is to cover the work of Kingfisher, a very large European retailer of primarily of building products, so I often say the Home Depot of Europe. And we came to having Kingfisher on the line by looking at a lot of our work over the last, of the GC3 over the last many months, looking at the challenges retailers are facing in understanding chemicals through their supply chain and communicating with those supply chains to identify safer alternatives, to implement those alternatives, and how that communication goes up and downstream. And Kingfisher, having to respond in part to REACH and other regulations, has had to, ROSE and the waste from electronic and electrical products, has had to begin to address those questions of how to sustainably manage chemicals through their supply chains. And we have today Paul Ellis from Kingfisher, who is their quality regulation manager. And I've had several conversations with Paul over the last few months and found Paul to be an enormous resource on chemicals management. And the way Paul thinks about it, he is not a chemist, and which is different for a lot of our calls to have someone who isn't a chemist, who doesn't have a chemicals background, who looks at chemicals management much more from a supply chain perspective, and who works from chemists. And I, from my conversations with Paul, what I found is that the Kingfisher experience could be extremely interesting and helpful to many of the companies in the GC3 and other retailers in the United States who are struggling with these questions about getting information through supply chains, understanding chemical toxicity, and then seeking safer materials. So, with that, I'm going to pass it to Paul. I would ask everyone to mute your line, and then after Paul's presentation, we will be having a question and answer discussion. And there's a background document that Paul had sent to us that is on the GC3 website that you can open up. So, Paul, off to you.
Yeah, thank you, Joel. Thank you, everybody, for attending the call, and thank you for the invitation, both Sarah and Joel, for me to share our experiences in Kingfisher. So let me just start by checking that everybody can see the slides. So starting with the first slide, what I want to do today is give you a brief introduction to me and my role, go through what Kingfisher is and who we represent, our social responsibility credentials, tell you a little bit about our chemicals regulations and policies and how we're managing that, tell you about what investment we made and the tools we deployed to manage chemicals. More importantly, I think most interesting is the learnings and the challenges and the solutions that we came up with to those challenges, and a Q&A session at the end. Okay. So bear with me, I have a slight technical problem. There we go. Okay, for me then, my role, my responsibilities are development of the chemicals management strategy. And I think it has to be said, and Joel mentioned this, I'm not a chemist, but I understand procedures and policies, and mostly I understand the commerciality. So I'm more commercially focused than I am chemicals focused. My role then from developing those strategies is really to work with our supply chains across the world in the implementation of those management strategies. I'll talk more about those strategies throughout this presentation. I also work very heavily within Europe to lobby for or against different types of regulations or changes to regulations within Europe. I also work very closely with all the operating companies around the group in driving common approaches, because it's pointless if one OpCo operating company doesn't respond to a common approach, then it becomes more difficult when we talk about global sourcing. And, of course, my other role is a policy policeman, so I will check that everybody is doing as they say. very quickly, for those that don't know Kingfisher, we are a global brand. You'll mostly see in the B&Q brand mostly across China and the UK. And then you'll see other brands, Castorama and Brico, which are in the mostly Middle Europe, so France, Spain, Poland. We consist of nearly 800 stores across Europe. Predominantly, to say, the UK business is B&Q. Let me just skip this next slide. There's a picture I'm showing on the slide here. If you think about B&Q, and if you can just imagine a Lowe's or a Home Depot in the US, if you walk into one of those stores, you can literally walk into a B&Q store, particularly with Home Depot. B&Q is very, very, very much like Home Depot. Okay, so what do we stand for? Kingfisher has a very strong heritage within CSR, CSR being corporate social responsibility. It's predominantly responsible, and its claims to fame really is for changing and developing the markets or global markets for FFC, so forestry standard stuff, and VOCs. We measure our group performance in terms of our policy application, and those can be viewed on the web page. That the link that is shown on the slide there. So at some later stage, please go and have a look. Okay, on to regulations. I'm not going to dwell on this. I'm sure you're all familiar with REACH. But this particular regulation is one of those things that drove us to change our own internal strategy and internal policy. In terms of REACH, it's often described as one of the most complex regulations ever been released by the EU. And you probably know that REACH has been mainly driven by NGOs or through NGOs. The key one that I think should drive all retailers is Article 33. Those that are not familiar with that, it basically gives the consumer the right to ask or the right to know if a product contains a substance of concern. If asked, a retailer has to respond within 45 days. So in reality, retailers, manufacturers, producers must know that what's inside their products. In terms of our own policy has been in existence for probably 5 or more years. However, it's probably fair to say that although the policy existed and it was enforced, it may be not as heavily as enforced as maybe it could have done before the advent of REACH. So we welcomed REACH as a way to drive a policy. Our policy itself, its key aims and principles is that we only sell products that do not adversely affect the health of our consumers, our employees, or that of the environment. It was revised in 2010 to stay ahead of regulations and to reflect the challenges of substance removal. I'll go more about that shortly. And to respond to growing consumer concerns where consumers are wanting to know more about the products and wanting to know more about the substances in our products that may cause harm. In terms of our own policy, we have 4 specific clauses that we set against our supply chain. Again, these can be viewed on the web link on this slide at kingfisherchemicals.com. Essentially what we say, if we find a we classify a specific substance and we classify it as either being restricted, we'd like it removed, we will phase it out, or we will watch it. And for each one of these, we work with in our own strategy, we have a strategy to identify which chemicals and which of those 4 categories we would apply to that specific chemical. Again, a little bit more about that as we go through this presentation. Okay, this is where it will be, I think, now that we've become more interesting. We invested heavily in development of our own web-based tool. We call this the QMT, or Quality Management Tool. And another part of this specific tool was the materials scorecard. The QMT is not just a management chemical management tool. The QMT manages all aspects related to quality. So if you think about safety, noise reduction, LVD, all these sorts of regulations that you should be familiar with, the QMT manages these things as well. We chose the QMT because it gives us tighter controls to manage related risks. And the existing tools that we saw in the marketplace, we found they didn't give us the flexibility to manage the additional policy requirements that we required of them. We very quickly learned that we needed to filter our products to minimize our workload. When we first started in our chemical strategy, we treated everything as potentially containing a substance of concern, and clearly, from a resource perspective, that wasn't what we should have done. And we also learned that our vendors, they just didn't seem to know or understand if their products contained a substance of concern. However, from our point of view, we expected our vendors to, at the minimum, know the generic materials that make up their product. We also acknowledged that our own QA technicians, quality assurance technicians, were unfamiliar of where to find these substances. So this led to development of what we termed as our material scorecard, as what it enabled us to do is automate the process and remove the need for extensive knowledge and extensive training. And again, I'll try to demonstrate this shortly in the scorecard. The principles of the scorecard are such that what we do is we look at each substance and we map these to where they may be found theoretically in the materials that we use in our product catalogs. Then each substance is categorized depending on the use and given a specific score. We call this the theoretical coefficient. The information we get for this is gained from intellectual studies, as we call it. It's gained from the ECHA. It's gained from our own experience, test labs, various sources we use to define what we call the theoretical coefficient. However, then we balance this with what we call a reality coefficient. And what this is, this consists of test data or intelligence that we gain from partners that we work with, who will tell us that we may theoretically think a substance resides in a specific material, but in reality it doesn't because it's no longer used in that way. The vendor completes the percentage weight distribution of their product by generic materials, and from that we deduce the score. What you'll see on your screen now is just a screenshot of our material scorecard, and I can demonstrate how this works shortly. But if you look on Joel's website, you will see this this spreadsheet. Behind it is a very complex calculation that, as I just mentioned before in a previous slide. And what we do, if it goes over a certain benchmark score, then we determine the product to be either a suspect or a non-suspect. In the case of the example showing on the screen, the vendor has inputted a certain weight percentage, and from the calculations of the scorecard, we consider this product to be a suspect. And in this case, we ask for more information about this particular product. I'll talk to you more about the information we ask shortly. One second. What you see now is our chemical strategy. What this strategy briefly explain this strategy, we look at the product, we apply then the scorecard. If the scorecard determines to us by our own definitions that the product is a non-suspect, then we ask for a declaration of conformity from the vendor. However, if our scorecard then filters the products to then conclude that it's potentially a suspect, we then ask the vendor to prove to us that the product is not a suspect. So in other words, we say to our vendors, we think you have a substance of concern in your product. Now, please prove to us that you have not. And again, I can show you that how that works in practice in the next slide. In the next slide, I've just taken a typical example to show how this may work and how this interfaces with the QMT, which is a quality management tool. If you take this particular product, so safety goggles, the vendor has inputted this 100% hard plastic. That product is made from 100% hard plastic. That is then entered the scorecard. Because our scorecard determines that in hard plastic you will find a whole number of potential substances, as you can see in the bottom right-hand corner. We would then ask the vendor to complete that element in the quality score in the QMT scorecard. And what they do, if they want to tell us there is substance of concern there, they would enter the concentration of that substance into the QMT. This then results in the generation of a declaration of conformity. And in this particular case, these safety goggles that were supplied, the vendor can demonstrate through third-party evidence that there is no substance of concern in that particular product, and therefore they would sign the declaration of conformity. Okay. The next slide is our vendor policy guidance. Now, we felt the learning from this is that we felt that we needed to provide an easy guide to our vendors of how they should respond to our policy. Again, if you care to look at the website link that I've provided, kingfisherchemicals.com, there is a glossary of terms that will demonstrate to the vendor where we believe you will find the specific substance, and also the conditions that we would apply to that particular substance, whether it be phase out, whether we are watching this substance, or whether we are restricting. We found this extremely useful. This is one of the tools that we found that helped communicate our policy in a simple way. Okay, now for the interesting part. In terms of our own learnings, we felt that our policy had to change, and that is we had to be stronger than our policy because consumers are getting more concerned about chemicals of concern in their products. We have long recognized this issue, and we learned early on that we needed board support and active sponsorship in order to ensure that policy it becomes a reality, because you will learn that when you apply a policy of this nature, there are commercial challenges to overcome. One of our bigger challenges in the Kingfisher Group is that Kingfisher is the holding company. It's just the parent company of many brands. So we're not the face on the high street, so we are not the brand in the marketplace. So we have brands like B&Q or Castorama or Brickley Depot. So when you have five competing brands, all in competitive markets, that creates some pretty interesting challenges for me to manage. So to overcome these challenges, we agreed that what we need to have was a group sourcing synergy program, which is currently in place, and this can be viewed again on the Kingfisher website. And what this synergy program allows us to do, it drives the delivery of common products, and therefore common products must determine common policy application. This way we can grow economies of scale and minimize the cost implications. But we also recognize we also needed to have or create that common sourcing platform on which that transparency is created. And we do this through our Kingfisher sourcing organization based in Hong Kong, mostly in Shanghai. Okay. In terms of when we defined our policy, so if you are looking at doing something similar, what we found was there are many chemical experts out there, But we soon discovered that it was difficult for to reach a definitive conclusion in any one substance. Now, this is me talking as a non-chemist, and when I talked to two chemists, they all had different opinions on different substances. This wasn't helpful. So what we decided to do was convene what we called the Kingfisher Chemicals Network, and this network consists of QA, chemical experts, policy makers, and commercial representatives. And what we do, we sit and we talk, basically, about certain chemicals, and we agree which of those chemicals, based on certain criteria, will be added to our policy. See, the primary role of the KCN is to define those substances that will be added to the policy. And also, we would view each of the members of the KCN would assess the risk or potential risk of any one specific substance and will present this back to the KCN, and we will consider whether we would include this or not. One of the key points here is that we also needed to balance the, NGO pressure or consumer needs against the business case. So whenever a substance is presented to the KCN, that KCN member who is presenting the substance must also propose a properly researched commercial position for which that KCN member would have consulted with commercial guys, the marketplace, alternative suppliers of these substances, so that they can conclude the cost of changing or the process for changing is one that can easily be achieved. The reason we did this was in the previous policy, we proposed certain substances, and I guess we didn't really understand what alternatives could be used, so we never gave specific options for the vendors, and it became very difficult for our vendors to apply a change because they didn't understand how or which alternatives they could use. In terms of our own investment, as I mentioned earlier, we developed our own custom-built web-based tool, as we call the quality management tool. And we also developed the scorecard. We saw the scorecard as a real key investment to us, as it solved many challenges. Because, and the example I give in the slide, is it allowed us to focus on the substances and remove the detailed knowledge needed about those substances and where those substances can be found. And we found this investment was critical to ensuring consistent application of our policy and obviously to meet our regulation requirements as we're based in the EU. Again, we learned that our vendors didn't know the ingredients. In some cases, they didn't even know the generic materials. Particularly, we're talking vendors in China, where they may not necessarily have a QA function, but they may have a good product for which they know how to make well, but they won't necessarily have a reasonable QA function. So we decided that, at a minimum, the scorecard will be completed, and we assist the scorecard is completed accurately. And what we did, in order to ensure that the scorecard was completed as accurately as possible, is that we've partnered with some third-party support, but we partnered with third-party test labs, and they help us with the verification of the scorecards. They've done this by setting up a global helpline. This global helpline is based in our office in Shanghai, and the vendor would essentially call in, send in a bill of materials, send in a photograph of the product, whichever method is suitable to the vendor, for which then the third party will assess that product and define the materials it's made from. Okay. In terms of market awareness and the process of a removal, in our experience, the majority of vendors don't know the ingredients of the product, as we said. For those that do know, and in test cases we did, we found that it takes a lot of time to remove the substance, and there's no guarantee that once that substance has been removed, that vendor will not revert back The reason for that, in the main, in the case studies we've done, is because we've found that alternatives are in short supply. The typical or topical substance that we often talk about is the phthalate DEHP, and its alternative, DINP. And in one particular case study that we worked with, we had to, our vendor literally had to go and buy a year's supply from Argentina in order to secure 1 year's supply of a product. So we have no confidence. We have great confidence and great support from the vendor, but we have no confidence that we can prolong the removal of the DEHP, because the DINP, its alternative that was selected, is in such short supply. We also learned that vendors need support in order to make that removal happen. This tends to be, and mostly around the technical challenges, because they may choose to use a substance, but they don't necessarily understand how that substance will be used in order to that substance does not compromise the performance of the product. Again, extremely technical, and there are suppliers and vendors out there that will help us do this and do help us do this with our vendors. This is related to our scorecard in terms of our dealing with our priorities. What we learned very quickly, very early on in our strategy, we found it's better to develop processes that enabled us to target our suspects rather than issue a very long list of substances. As soon as we did this, we found that our success rate of finding suspected products dramatically increased when we introduced that scorecard to help us deal with this. Remember, you can't deal with all products at the same time. You must prioritize. And we do this again by looking at the highest risk in terms of profile to the consumer and the volumes that we're placing into the market. This helps us prioritize which ones to deal with first. A big learning for us was the education. We found that we did originally underestimate the value of training, but we soon realized this and put this right. We also know that chemistry is a very specialist area and baffles the average person, including me sometimes. So developing easy-to-understand plain English guidance is a worthwhile investment in time and effort. We use webinars, interactive guidance as for training. We have produced webinars for our vendors in China on how to complete the scorecard, how to complete the QMT, and basic training for reach. And I'm sure most people have done this type of exercise. Even with that training and the extensive training that we did, you can't expect the average QA technician to fully understand. So we need to be prepared to refresh that knowledge on a regular basis. In regards to our commercial challenges, being in the market creates its own challenges. Vendors may not see the benefits, and buyers may not understand them either. But if you remember, our objective is to meet the policy objective, not the regulation. Cost increases are always quoted, and they're always inflated. So we conduct what we call a value engineering process, where it helps us understand the actual cost enables us to challenge back to the vendor. Buyers need to understand the benefits in terms of environmental protection, and these need to be marketed and to create that market differential. What we found very early on, buyers would want to respect the policy, but when they're challenged with cost price increases and margin deflation, then which one will win? And we have this constant debate internally, what seems almost daily. In terms of alternative substances, we have worked with many vendors across in the last few years, 3 years, to define how easy or how quickly or how difficult it is to take out a substance. And we've learned that the vendors do need technical support in choosing those suitable substances. And they need to be very careful that they do not opt for alternative substances that could even be more harmful. This is a learning also with Mattel, I believe, in China. if you recall that story. Our case studies also tell us that the alternatives are in very short supply, so in order to achieve sustainable removal, this can be a real challenge, and you must monitor the substances you're using as alternatives. Under REACH, those substances are frequently added, so it suggests that over time, substances that you remove and add to your products may actually become more harmful in the future. So you need to horizon scan all the time to keep an eye and keep a track on which substances are being considered in the future as being harmful to the environment as more evidence grows in the marketplace. Okay, well, thank you for listening. I'd be very welcome any questions.
That's great. Thank you so much, Paul. A lot of detail, a lot of lessons to be learned, and so we'll open it up for questions.
Hi, this is Corey Robertson with Hewlett Packard. So I noticed on the scorecard it looked like there was probably some confidential formulation information. Can you describe, you know, how that's treated, you know, who's allowed to see it, if you've run into issues with that?
The data that we're holding now, obviously we take custody for. And we work solely with a specific partner in France who has developed the data for us. In terms of, we don't allow anybody to see this. The scorecard is locked down, password protected. I tried to share with you the principles of how we guided that calculation without actually showing you the numbers. Does that answer your question?
Well, I guess, how do your people within your company, you know, do they look at that information? Do they have access to the actual formulations that show the specific ingredients, or just one or two people?
Yeah, good point. Actually, no. We what we found was we decided to restrict the calculation to a nominated handful of people within the business. The reason for that was, as I said earlier, there was a lot of people that knew not very much about chemistry but had a lot to say about the calculations and vice versa. So what we did is we restricted it to maybe two or three people. I'm one of those people. We have a chemistry person in the business, and we use a third party. So, yeah, it's just restricted.
This is Rich Leroff from the Investor Environmental Health Network. I first encountered B&Q back in 2004 and actually have in my files the product integrity chemicals list from way back then. So this is clearly a step forward. I'm curious, Walmart in the U.S. Worked with the Works to develop GreenWorks, a screening system for products. And they basically invited other retailers to participate in that. And I'm just wondering whether or not Kingfisher has reached out to other retailers with this system, whether Kingfisher has any interest in sharing the system with other retailers, this in the interest of efficiency and not reinventing the wheel.
That's a good question. I've seen the works. I've met with Kieran Callahan when we spoke about the works. And for us, it wasn't a suitable solution because mostly it focuses on chemical substances, whereas what we're concerned about in our case is more about what we call hard articles. Although we do import substances, we are not the main importer for mixtures or substances. To answer your question specifically, no, it's a good question. I haven't really considered whether we should offer this solution to a wider audience. If we did, I think it will be quite difficult for us to do this in terms of copyrights and management of the database, etc. But if anybody's interested to have an offline conversation about the detail, then I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Hi, Tom Strong. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead. And then there's a web question. Well, I'll chime in.
Okay, my question is just, I would like a little bit more information. It's Alex Stone here from Washington State. I'm a little bit interested in how you make your alternative, how you select your alternative substance, what substances, what sort of review do you do, how do you determine something is a preferable alternative to what you're trying to replace?
Okay. On that point, we ask our vendors to look at the alternatives, but we do not recommend an alternative, and I think that's important. When they've recommended that, when they've said to us, yep, yeah, we intend to use this specific alternative substance, we would then pass that to our chemical experts, as in the KCN, the Chemicals Network, and they will review using the evidence that was available to us through the ECHA or through the NGOs that we support, such as ChemSec, Chemical Watch, all these other people that we would use, and we will ask them their opinion. If their opinion is, once they've given their opinion, we make our decision on whether that alternative substance is suitable to be used in the Kingfisher product. If it's not, of course, we challenge the vendor. We say, no, sorry, that substance may be rejected at some time in the future. Maybe it will become, in the context of REACH, a candidate, a substance candidate, and that's where we reject the use of that alternative substance.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let me do the question off the web. It's about the sort of rough costs to manage the chemical supplier and regulation data that you collect each year.
Great question. Without giving any specific numbers, we are talking millions here. Just to quantify that, if you take the additional resources we've had to deploy, because managing a chemicals policy and managing REACH as a regulation is something you have to deploy resources to, and you have to invest in systems to do so. So I could really only answer that question and say it's probably ballpark figure around $2 to $5 million, depending on where the business currently resides in terms of its own internal processes.
Well, let me ask you a follow-on to that, Paul, which is there's certainly the upfront investment, then there's the maintenance investment, but then do you see clear benefits from this? And have you tried to quantify those to make the case to management?
I guess we only quantify this on the damage, the brand damage, if you don't do it. We know that our consumers are concerned about substances in their products. And therefore, by leaving them in there, we believe it is more damaging to the brand to leave them in there than it is to invest in taking them out. In terms of that quantifiable or monetary value, that's just almost impossible to say. It's and often a question the board would ask about how do you monetize that brand damage. It's a question we can't answer.
This is
your answer to the question, Joel?
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you. Why don't we go on to the next question?
This is Rich Leroff. I have another question, if you don't mind, which is, in creating your watch list, do you reference ChemSec's sin list, since you referenced ChemSec in a comment a few moments ago?
Yeah. With the sin list, we do observe and support the sin list. But a lot of the substances in the sin list are not in products that would concern us anyway because they're not within our portfolio. And what we do support with ChemSec is we support the progression of the sin list into the context of REACH. There are some substances in the sin list, or maybe one or two from memory, that have progressed into what we classify as to be phased out or to be restricted. So to answer your question in brief, yes, we observe the sin list, but it's not something that, in terms of its complete number, 200 and so, it's not something that we manage actively because the products it resides in, the substances that are there, are not in the products that we sell.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Could you give Rich Lehoff again, since there's silence on the phone? You talked about lobbying for and against legislation. If an NGO came up to you, an NGO like ChemSec or a counterpart NGO in Europe came up to you and said, what chemical regulations have you spoken out in favor of lately that would tend to support NGO positions? What regulations or legislation would you point to?
Okay, I think the immediate one we would put, we still have positive and negative answer to that one, Rich. For me, REACH is one regulation that we believe supports the removal of ingredients of concern. However, we would also say that that same regulation creates a very large administrative burden because of some of the requirements that are laid within that regulation. So we'd have two messages to NGOs. We support REACH because of its objectives, but we'd like to reduce some of the administrative burden that's associated with that regulation. In terms of a negative point, I'm just thinking now about a current regulation that's been proposed for biocides. Now, this particular proposal currently making its way through the Commission is based on identifying specific biocides that would be used in the supply chain and then labeling those products that contain that biocide. Again, we are lobbying. We support obviously the non-use of these types of biocides and only the ones that the Commission believed to be authorised. But again, there are administration issues, there are identification issues that will make it extremely difficult for a lot of retailers and manufacturers to comply with. So we would ask for or call for some sort of relaxation on some of the requirements that are laid in that regulation.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question, Rick?
Yes, it does. Thanks.
So there's a web request from... Oh, go ahead.
I had a question. This is Eve Torrey from the Lowell Center about working collaboratively. Do you work with other retailers on any of this work? And if so, who and what are the results of that kind of work? Or has this been something, you know, that you just work on solely within, you know, your own company?
At the moment, this is something we work solely on our own company, but we would welcome any retailers to come talk to us about our process so that we can share our learnings. What we have found, though, is that in the discussions that I've had, mainly within Europe, and these would be guys like Home Retail, I'm not sure if you're familiar with these, they're Homebase in the UK, or Argos. We have found that, certainly in the UK, our processes and what we have developed is I'm going to use their terms. This is not my terminology. This is their terminology. They say that we are light years ahead of where they are. So sometimes, yes, we try to share our experiences, but I think they need to do a bit of catch up themselves in order to be able to embark on the sort of strategy that we've got in place.
That makes sense. Thank you.
So there was a question from Monica Becker. I liked it. A question without a question. Do you want to ask your question, Monica?
Yes. In fact, I tried to raise my hand. In response to Rich Lehoff's question, you cited some of the challenges of working together with other retailers, sharing the system, and utilizing existing systems such as the Works, and that all makes sense to me. I'm just wondering, in principle, do you see any potential benefits to standardizing systems across retailers, both in terms of the software systems that you might be using or standardizing the types and format, electronic format of the data coming from your vendors? Have you thought about that? Do you see any potential benefit?
Could you repeat that question slightly again? The line was a bit the echo.
Yes, I hear that.
I didn't get all of your question then.
Sorry, it might be my phone, and I apologize.
So, Monica, can you mute me if that helps?
Okay, let me try this again. If not, I'll pass. But I'm wondering if you have thought about the potential benefits of standardizing these data collection systems or standardizing the formats of data that vendors are providing, you know, across retailers or across other parts of the supply chain. You mentioned in response to Rich Leroff's question that there are certainly some challenges to sharing your system and adopting other systems like the Works. But can you see some potential benefits to getting the data that you need and the products that you want?
Yeah, I think there is. They already exist as well. There are, from memory, there is a system called ReachIt, I think it's called, and another system called Vertico, which aim to do a similar thing, because one of the key issues that vendors would say is they don't want to give away the secrets about the ingredients of their product. In our case, we opted not to go for those types of common solutions because it never gave us the opportunity or the flexibility to extend past regulation and manage policy. And for those reasons, we developed this system. So I guess coming back to my previous answer, the other question is that if there are vendors out there or retailers out there that have policies extending as far as we would like to extend them, then we'd like to talk with them, because then we'd be able to share our experiences and our learning in more greater detail. But to be honest, I don't really see those retailers there. In that
okay,
place,
thank
I don't
you.
See them with the policies.
Any other questions? I'm going to ask you, Paul, just if you could sort of, in sort of the big picture, say, you know, what was your greatest challenge in all of this, and what's been the most positive surprise that you've gotten out of this whole process? It's been very intense, and you know. And the cost for the company.
Our biggest challenge, I guess, is global awareness of maybe regulations, and also global awareness of the concerns around chemical content, which manifests itself in vendors not knowing what ingredients they use in their products. So that was our, I guess, my biggest surprise. In terms of our biggest success, again, we felt that our biggest breakthrough was the scorecard. This helped us drive our policy and drive our regulation. And we felt this really, really helped us and has helped the vendor base as well to simplify and help them as well. It simplified what is essentially a very mystifying subject. If they don't know the ingredients, then we've had the scorecard two functions. It helps us understand where the ingredients may be, and equally help the vendor do the same. In terms of overall cost, yeah, I think we would probably be talking $2 to $5 million in terms of our own investment of development of the Q&T and of the management and ongoing running processes for the scorecard and the reach and the sort of chemical strategy.
Right.
Yep.
Any last question?
Any further question?
You laid out so much on the phone call, Paul, that I think there's a lot to digest here.
Obviously. Well, I'm happy to answer any questions offline if that's what people would like to do. That's easy for me to do. So feel free to send any emails or questions directly, either for Joel or directly to myself.
Well, I want to thank you, Paul, for a very detailed and thoughtful presentation that outlines a challenging or a challenge that many retailers are facing and product manufacturers of how to how to take on this big area of understanding chemicals and products, and then assessing and promoting alternatives. So, Paul, thank you again for the presentation. And Paul's email is in the slides. The slides will be up and a recording on the GC3 website. And I just wanted to announce the next webinar, which will be held in September, date to be announced. And the title of that is Technology Advances the Green Screen, Green Works, Green Chemistry Assessment Scoring Tool. So that'll be another look at how retailers are starting to think about chemicals management, understanding product chemicals, product chemistry, and then thinking about assessing and promoting alternatives. So with that, I want to thank everyone for being on the call. And if you have any questions, please email Paul or myself or Sarah Shields or Eve Torrey at the Lowell Center, and we'll get right back to you. Thank you, and have a great day and a happy summer.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.